Spring is coming, slowly, here in New England, and we're excited about the whole idea of change and new beginnings and birds and grass and stuff like that. What does that have to do with hashtag amwriting? Well, maybe it's time for a new beginning for you as a book coach. Just imagine enrolling in the classes, meeting a cohort, learning all the ways coaches are editorial and emotional support for writers, and then starting to line up your first clients. Students working with Author Accelerator's book coaching program say they often begin to book authors before they're even done with the course, and they end up being booked ahead months in advance. Sound like fun? I absolutely agree. Go to bookcoaches.com to learn more.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause and...
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag AmWriting, the podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, memoirs, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting that work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I am the author of The Gift of Failure, and now my new book is The Addiction Inoculation, and you can find excerpts of that book actually at the New York Times and the Washington Post and a Q&A at the Wall Street Journal.
And I am KJ Delantonia, the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, the nonfiction book How to Be a Happy Parent, former editor and lead writer of the Motherload blog at the New York Times, and in the process of... novels number 2 and 3 and goodness knows what. I don't even know what I'm doing right now. Something. I wake up every day and do some
things.
Write
some words.
That's what I do.
She puts her butt in the chair and she keeps her head in the game is what she does, people.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. That's what I do. Okay, we're going to go with that.
Okay.
And we're going to stop and introduce our guest for today. I am so excited to welcome Emma Gannon. She is a best-selling author, a podcaster, a journalist, a writer of fiction and not nonfiction, and just general woman about town, as known for her writing about the new world of work as she soon will be for her fiction. Her debut novel, Olive, the novel's called Olive. I feel like I didn't get that out right, but that's okay.
That's okay.
Her debut novel, Olive, centers on a journalist who loves her career and the many other things that fill her world, friends, fun, family, and is in the process of owning her sense that children won't be one of those things. Emma, like her protagonist, is happily without spawn, and that's what we're going to talk about today. No, not deciding whether or not you want to have kids. Please, you know us better than that. But looking at your personal life when it comes to your fiction, but not at, you know, this isn't, we're not talking auto fiction here. And we can't wait to dig into that one. So Emma, welcome. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. I love your podcast.
You can't see her, but her glasses kick serious butt. They are really, really good. They're big and black and beautiful. They're just gorgeous, gorgeous glasses.
I love that when you wear glasses, you can just put them on and not have to wear any makeup or try.
I have realized that actually that this is, I'm so glad someone finally said this because there are those times that I have to go on a video call and I'm like, I can't makeup. And then I put my glasses on and I'm like, oh, well, that just fixed everything right there. It's all good now.
I am framed.
Yeah, exactly.
We've all got them. And although mine are kind of reflective today. So Emma also has a really, I love Emma's website. So y'all might want to go and check out emmagannon. Is it .co or .com?
I think it's .co.uk. I think.
Yes. So, but if you start typing Emma Gannon, it will roll up and it is cute and shows off her style. So,
emmagannon.co.uk for all of our fact checking delights right there.
So, Emma, before we get into the fiction, I wanted to talk just a little bit about your successful journalism career because we love hearing how people got started. So give us a little bit of detail on how you got into the freelance journalism part of your work. And, you know, give us a big rejection story that you had to overcome.
I dread this question, if I'm being honest, because my career has been the most zigzaggy kind of misshapen, happy accidents, right place, right time, working it all out as
yep,
I go.
I hear that.
Kind of thing. So I don't have like a neat story, but I guess in hindsight, it all makes sense and it all kind of matches up and it all brought me to where I am now, which I'm very grateful for. But yeah, I started.
I think that's what listeners like to hear, you know?
Yeah.
That you didn't like go to school in journalism and then get a job in journalism and then write some journalism and then write a book. And so, you know, if you do that, yay you. But none of us did. So.
Well, and plus the story, any story you tell lives up to the Observer's note that you quote, author Emma Gannon is the voice of the multi-hyphen era. So I love hearing about all the hyphens. I love hearing about people who are the voice of the multi-hyphen era. So take us there.
I love that I use the word multi-hyphenate over and over again to basically just cover up the fact that I'm like this scrappy millennial who can't make her mind up and does loads of random stuff. But that, I think a lot of us fall into that bracket of just chopping and changing and trying new things. But yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a journalist anymore, but that's definitely where I started out and kind of what I wanted for myself. And I started working in advertising and social media, working for brands, sidestepped, took a pay cut to work in a women's magazine, and then found myself at Condé Nast, which I thought was like the dream, where I've always wanted to be. And the world of magazines just wasn't really inspiring me. I don't think it's what it was in the 90s, unfortunately. And on the side, to kind of soothe my own creativity, I think, I started a blog, started a newsletter, was doing all the things I was doing now, but a long time ago. And I'm so glad I did, because those are the things that kind of laddered up to finding a literary agent, etc.
And what was it like going from the nonfiction that people were expecting you to give them more of, and which you actually are giving us more of? You have another nonfiction book coming out this year, right? What was it like saying, hey, y'all, another side veer here, you know, another curveball coming. I'm just going to take some time and I'm going to finish this novel instead of doing the things that you're used to paying me for.
Yeah, so I think maybe I was overthinking it, that people would find it weird and judge me and think it strange that I was kind of going off on a random tangent, but I kind of wrote the multi-hyphen life so I could have this get out of jail free card that is like, I'm going to do something different now, guys. But yeah, I think people weirdly do want to put women especially in boxes. They want to be like, what's your thing? What do you do? And then people kind of get confused at like whether you're rebranding yourself and now I'm just a novelist, and I'm like, no, I want to do some of the other stuff too. So I guess I don't have this one goal in mind. I'm just trying lots of different things. But we were talking just before we hit record that fiction is harder and it is a different skill. And I find that with nonfiction, I'm basically writing in my speaking voice. Like, I'm not trying to be really overly intellectual. I just want to connect. I just want to speak to people. So that just comes out quite naturally, and obviously work with editors to make that, you know, come out better. But with fiction, it's not just the writing, it's the storytelling, it's the characters, it's, God, it's so much, so many drafts. I mean, I'm scared to do another one.
What was the hardest thing for you to nail from going from, you know you can write a whole book, like, you can put a book's worth of words into a file, but what was the hardest thing in terms of fiction to shift to from putting nonfiction words into that file?
I think it was just swallowing my ego in terms of, this is my first novel, like, I'm gonna look back in 10 years and probably just think, oh God, but it's what I'm capable of doing now. And I remember Elizabeth Gilbert once saying that when you're starting something, there is a massive gap between your ability and your taste. And I think it was just getting over like how rubbish the first draft is. Like, I'm vomiting in my mouth at how much it needs work, and just keeping going. I think motivating myself over a period of over a year on the same project was challenging. So I'm used to like doing podcasts and blogs and newsletters. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different thing.
I'm so glad you said that, because we've talked in the past about how, for me, nonfiction just flows freely, like, and especially creative nonfiction. I just love it. And then my novel writing is so frustrating to me because I've never heard it said exactly that way, where the things I'm writing down and the story I want to tell, the story is there, but my abilities aren't there yet. And that also helps me understand. I was listening to an interview with Stephen King where he talked about the number of books that some people know that, you know, he had like his novel about Kennedy's assassination and someone going back to try to stop it back in time. That book he started when he was a high school teacher, and he just knew he didn't have the skills to pull it off, so he put it in a drawer. But he also in this interview talked about the fact that he had the idea for the dome, and it starts with this like groundhog being cut in half when the dome comes down on the town, and that's all he had, and he just knew he didn't have the chops to pull that entire story off. But when he finally did, it also began with that one image that he had in his head of the dome chopping the groundhog in half. And
of course, I think there's something.
Of course, it did. I think there's something really amazing to be said about that. That it's like that word "yet" that's used a lot in education. You know, of course, I don't have this skill in hand yet because I'm just starting. And so let's get there so that, you know, get working so that we can acquire these skills. I love the way you've described that. So, and Elizabeth Gilbert, I should say.
I think actually, and that also is Ira Glass. I recognize that quote. He's the one that's like, the gap between your taste and your skill.
I think she was quoting him.
I think she was quoting
Ira. And then now I'm double quoting.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's okay. We're all.
And I'll try very hard not to attribute the quote to Emma Gannon in the future.
It's okay.
Just get sued.
It's okay.
It's fine.
All good. So now let's talk about the novel. So the novel is Olive, and as I said in the introduction, it centers on a woman who is, I wouldn't say she's deciding not to have kids. I would say that she's learning to own and embrace that decision. And I know from your writing that you've also been in that position, but I also know from your writing that you are not Olive. This is not your story. What has it been like? Do you get interviews? Viewers sort of assuming that you are Olive. Are you, you know, what's it been like to draw that line now that the book is out in the world between you and your character?
It's been so interesting because it's definitely stemmed from an emotional place of, you know, me grappling with these topics. And the book is basically loads of conversations with my best friends in a pub. It's all stemmed from real chat. It's just been attributed to different characters and different situations. But I thought, I don't really want to talk about myself, and I'm going to set that boundary and say, this is fiction. How dare you ask if it's about me? And then I thought, actually, I would have loved it if I was like 18, 19, 20 to see someone say, I don't know if it's for me, and sort of tell that real story behind the fiction, because I just didn't really have anyone to look to except for like Samantha Jones memes in Sex and the City where she's like moaning about everyone's kids. I didn't have anything to hang on to. So actually me writing the personal essays, like I wrote one for Elle, an essay about me and my soon to be husband. And actually the emails I got were lovely. And actually this is kind of why I do this work. So it would be a shame to not go there, I think.
Well, actually from a marketing perspective, it gives you a story, right? You know, the totally sort of crass approach to deciding what to write. If you write your novel about something that you also have a personal story about, your road to getting essays published and getting yourself on non-writing podcasts and that kind of thing is actually easier. But I suspect you didn't think about that when you started.
Well, I think maybe the PR team did. But I also think that I'm not embarrassed or ashamed, or I've got nothing to hide in terms of not wanting children. And it's something that my friends and family kind of know about. So I don't think it was like it was on the BBC homepage, like, child free story or whatever. And I can sit behind that. That's fine. But I wonder with other authors, like if it's a really sensitive topic about, I don't know, death or suicide or drugs or like stuff that I think someone would actually find quite harrowing to like talk about over and over and over again. So I just feel I knew that it was a topic that actually I kind of love talking about. This wasn't like you know, because I interview a lot of authors as well, and sometimes I just don't know if they're wanting to go there, even if it's a memoir or something that they've exposed. It sometimes it's just for the book and not for the interviews, weirdly.
Right. Yeah. No, I can understand that. And I think debut authors get it more than more. Like, once you've got 4 or 5 books under your belt, people are less likely to assume that everyone in your book is you. That's my take on it from listening to other writers talk about
it. It's weird that it's normally asked to women, though, isn't it? Like, I think people don't think women
have... Nobody thinks Stephen King is really dropping glass domes on groundhogs. Well, I do, actually.
But... Yeah, men have imaginations, apparently.
I don't know. I guess Philip Roth people tended to write. I feel like there was a lot of... But he courted that. Or at least I think he did. Whereas women kind of get, you know, we get stuck with it as though you couldn't possibly tell any story other than your own. So it must be sort of challenging to talk to an interviewer and say, well, yeah, you know, my experience, well, I think we all end up in this position. My experience fed this story, but this story is not my experience.
And I think maybe as well, it's to do with the fact that I don't think we've scratched the surface on a lot of women's stories. And even with TV and film, like, I haven't seen a child-free by choice protagonist really centered in like pop culture mainstream stuff yet. So I think maybe women do want to write about some of their personal stuff because it's like, we can't see it, so we want to see it. And so it sort of drives that story. It's almost like, let me get this agenda out of the way and then maybe I'll write about like wizards and other stuff.
Did you wrestle with that when it came to decide? Because when you decided you were going to write a novel, I mean, I'm assuming you sort of always, well, I know because I've heard you talk to other people, you've always wanted to write a novel, right? So did you sort of always have this story that you were carrying around with you, or did you go through a period of, well, I could do this, but it's really awfully personal, and I also could do wizards instead, and I'm just using wizards as shorthand for every other possibility? Or was it really like this one was bursting to come out?
So I've wanted to write fiction forever, and I was scared. I was too scared. I tried 5 years ago and just put it in a drawer and thought, this is, what am I doing? It was a real confidence issue for me, if I'm being really honest. I just felt like other people write novels, not me. You know, it just felt, it was almost like that kind of university snobbery had like, you know, overcome me a little bit of just, you're not an artist, I think, is what happened. Because with nonfiction, yes, a book is art, but it's kind of not, like, in the same way you're not creating a story. So yeah, I just put it off. And then I got an idea, and I get a lot of ideas on transport, like planes and trains and cycling. They all come to me. And I just knew I really want to write about 4 women where they're all going through different things. And it was kind of based on my friendship group. Like, one's a mum, one's not sure if she can have them, and one is not sure. And then I don't think I do. And actually, I did think, oh, maybe this could be a nonfiction. Maybe I could interview women. And I did end up interviewing a lot of women. Maybe this could be a nonfiction about real women who are child-free. And I just thought, God, fiction would be so fun. I could just say all the things I don't feel like I can say in the mouths of other fictional people.
But then did you find that some of the friends that might see themselves in the pages, did you worry, I think is more what I want to ask you. Did you worry that they'd be like, well, I never really felt that way about you, or... anything along those lines?
It was interesting because I felt that might happen. There are a few bits in the book where I'm sort of digging at people, and actually they never said anything. And also what was really nice is a lot of my friends, after they read it, because I was quite nervous, they basically said, this is like a love letter to friendship. And I think we just felt closer, because at the heart of Olive, even though they're all horrible to each other sometimes, they really love each other, and they are all trying to be there for each other in different ways and kind of celebrate each other's milestones. Olive's not going to have kids, but maybe it's like, please, can you turn up to dinner on a Tuesday sometimes because I really need you? And just that sort of transactions of what friendship is.
Can I ask you a nuts and bolts question? You said that, you know, writing fiction requires just a lot more drafting, a lot more drafts. So what did your process for this book look like? How many drafts did you go through? And when did you feel like you could finally, you finally had the book in hand?
And along the same lines, did it start, was it always centered on a single protagonist, or did you play with multiple points of view?
It was always the single protagonist. And I felt like I kind of needed to start, not basic, but I was like, maybe I'll ladder up to like multiple first persons one day. But I just felt like I needed to kind of go in with this one character and build around her. But it was just a real humbling, like, face on the floor experience, because my nonfiction was going really well and I was kind of getting a lot of validation from that, and sales were going well and people were buying it. And I just felt like I just had my agent say it wasn't good enough, and we went back and we redrafted. And I'm, you know, I'm friends with my agent, we've got a great relationship, but like someone saying to you, this isn't, you know, you need to go back and do this again, it's good for you, I think, to learn that you can't just, yeah, you can't just whiz something off and send it. Like, this is a graft. So we did loads of drafts together, and she saw like the worst of me, I think.
And what was the so with nonfiction, you can say, I want to write a nonfiction piece about a friend group that has different views about having children. There you go. That is an actual, that I'm done now. With a novel, that's not a story. That's not a, you know, it's not a, that's not a plot. That's a, I don't even know what it is. It's a hook, actually, is probably what it is. How was it going from that hook to an actual, you know, story with an arc, a beginning and an end?
I think I had to kind of forget about the hook when I went in and created the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as sort of simplistic as it sounds, I felt like I was navigating this beginning, middle and end. And I kind of, I felt like, and maybe it's because I read so much, and I'm not saying that I kind of got it perfectly right, but I felt like I've read so many books and watched so many films that you kind of know this natural, like, you know, hero's journey, all is lost, finding herself. Mm-hmm. She has to be more different at the end than she is at the beginning. Her friends need to kind of be there for a reason to push the plot along. And every character had a role. Dorothy, for example, is there to kind of show Olive like growing and changing, and all the older women in the book are kind of reflections of what Olive wants to be. And I don't know, it's weird. It felt like I kind of very naturally, and I mean, I've read all the Save the Cat books and all the, all that stuff, but I felt like I ingested it all and then went and like ran free, if that makes sense.
So it wasn't like, that wasn't, it was more like every draft sucked overall, and then they sucked less and less and less, as opposed to this draft is good in this way but bad in this way, is what it sounds like you're saying.
Yeah, every single draft I felt like, and I know other people have said this, and I'm probably stealing another Ira Glass quote, but like it's like a block of stone and you're chiseling mm-hmm. away, and actually you create something beautiful, but it takes you ages and loads of wrong turns.
I think for me, it's like I chisel one chunk. Like I can chisel the story and then I'm like, ah, dang, you know, there's no color. Like I left out the emotion or whatever. So I think some of us work on the whole thing at once, and some of us tend or sort of like, I don't know. I don't even know how to analogize it, but just focusing on different chunks of it at a time. So I think it's great to talk about how we, you know, that process of the sucky first draft sucks in different ways for everyone.
Totally.
But it definitely sucks for all of us. At least we hope so. If it doesn't suck for you, don't email us.
Yeah. I don't want to hear it if you're just getting it all done in the first draft. But I can't remember who I interviewed recently. I think it was, oh God, I've forgotten her name. Oh no. But the author of Bridgerton.
Mm-hmm.
She was saying that she is just like a skeleton first draft, and then it's like fleshing out. And that, I feel like that's what I'm doing now. Because I've only written one. So when someone says, what's your process? I'm like, I don't know, because it was so messy.
That is exactly where I am.
I looked it up. That was Julia Quinn.
Julia Quinn.
Excellent.
Sorry, Julia.
Yep.
Yeah. And that sounds sounds to me like a better process, building a skeleton and then putting flesh on it, because you could fix your skeleton more easily than you can fix. I, at least in the first one, wrote reams and reams, and like all my people were sort of fully fleshed out and they did all the things and they were moving and they were drinking their tea and all the extra stuff was there. So then when you had to take it out, it was a lot of words. So I think I'm shooting for the skeleton approach, but yeah, I don't know what my process is.
I find that taking stuff out thing so hard, because then you're left with, did I refer to this before, or do I have to reestablish
also
familiarity?
True.
And that's true of fiction and nonfiction. I mean, there were places in the book where, you know, I had to go back. And of course, this is before, there's no, you know, I you have to go back and you have to look to see, wait, have I like set this up so that my reader will even know what I'm talking about? And that's a lot of the work of the editing process. And getting to know people is an even more nuanced process than just setting up an acronym for some organization.
So true.
So you're working on a second novel right now? Am I right?
Yes, I am.
Is it as close personally in terms of topic, or is it something different?
It's something different.
You don't have to tell us what it is.
It's something different, but it's interesting that it's multicast, so there's a few mm-hmm. different voices in there. And what's interesting, and I've heard other authors say this, and I'm always like, really? How? That's so interesting. And now I'm like, oh, I get it, that basically they're all me, but they're not me at all. And they're all different mm-hmm. sides of me. And yeah, they're entirely different women, but each of them, they could be me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So your first one, you had someone that you could identify with in a sort of a tighter way. And this time you're exploring different pieces of, I like the could have been you.
Yeah. Like I can put myself in their shoes.
Alternate yeah. realities. Absolutely. I do want to do, I know we're talking about fiction, but I do want to do a shout out for the book Sabotage, because I really, really loved it. I really sort of, we talk a lot about imposter syndrome and, you know, what gets us stuck and the bright, shiny objects and all the things that sort of get us in a place where it's harder for us to write. And so I always appreciate when someone takes a deep look at how we undermine our own efforts sometimes. So thank you very much for that book. I really enjoyed it.
I think that's my most honest book. So thank you.
Absolutely. And those are most of the questions we get is, you know, I'm stuck here and how do I get out of my own way? Those are the things that the listeners of the podcast tend to talk about in the Facebook group. And the problem is that there's so much psychology involved in that without knowing the person, and, you know, we tend to give the same hints over and over again, which is just sit down and write some words and hopefully you can push yourself forward. But there's a lot of therapy involved in trying to figure out how people get in their own way.
Totally. And what's been so weird for me that I've realized is that as I get older, it gets worse. Like I'm kind of overthinking and sabotaging, and my inner critic, like I'm thinking, surely I can say I'm okay now. Like I've published quite a few books. Like surely I'm established enough that I don't need to be this imposter syndrome person, but I still am. So I think I really wanted to talk about it because there are so many tactics to kind of get out of our own way, but why does it get worse as like you get more successful? Like that's what I don't really understand. It's like when I was younger, when I was in my teens, I would get on an aeroplane and I would read a magazine and fall asleep. Now I'm like, is everything working in this aeroplane? And it's just, yeah. I kind of wish I had more of my 20-something kind of I don't care vibes.
I think it helps for me anyway when I'm really excited about what I'm doing and I'm going in for my own sense of curiosity. Like I'm cannot wait to get started on my next book. And, you know, it's mainly because I just can't wait to start digging in. I'm just excited for that. And so at least when I'm excited, it crowds out the voices of doubt in my head. Those will come later, I'm sure, when I start handing chapters over to my editor. There's going to be plenty of voices then. But for right now, I get to just listen to the excitement.
I love that, because I think if anyone asks me for advice, which I don't ever give because I don't have any good advice, really, is that you kind of do have to write for yourself and get that excitement and that kind of magical feeling that I can't really describe, because if you're writing just for the industry and the marketing and the, you know, the publishing industry, I think you can lose that. And so it's so important.
There's a moment I think of a lot when I first started writing for a bigger audience, like when my blog wasn't just, you know, six people reading it and suddenly there were more people reading it. My voice changed, and my dad wrote me an email, and he said, "Where'd you go?" He's like, "I don't know who this person is, but this is your voice disappeared. What happened to it?" And I was able to start. I have an ideal reader in my head and stuff, and I had to just really focus on who my ideal reader is and why I'm writing this stuff, and it came back. But it was a really good reminder that when I start trying to write for someone other than myself, as the main person, things get bad. Things get really bad. So, yeah.
I love that. I love dads.
Yeah, dads are the best. Boy, you know, I've been talking about my dad a lot recently because he's also the reason I got sober in the end, because he was the one who intervened on me. So lately in a lot of interviews, I've been talking about sort of the moment. So now, I had never put those two things together. My dad's intervened in good ways a couple of times now. I hadn't even thought about that. So, KJ, do you want to take a break and talk about what we're reading?
I think that's an excellent plan.
Okay.
If you like hashtag amwriting, and I know you do because you're here listening, you will love Writing Class Radio. Writing Class Radio airs true personal stories and gives you tips on how to write your own stories. We're also open to airing and discussing your personal essay. Everyone has a story. What's yours? Find Writing Class Radio wherever you find your podcasts.
All right. We love talking about books. And what we love is for our guest to tell us something you've been reading and loving lately. Or two things. Whatever you got.
So I do this thing sometimes where I read fiction and nonfiction together because I kind of want to, depending on the mood, read one or the other. And mm-hmm. So I've been reading Martha Beck's new book, The Way of Integrity, which I think has just been a New York Times bestseller.
Oh, I love her. I didn't know she had a new book.
Oh, I mean, I'm obsessed with her. I talk about her all the time, and I think this is her best book. Oh, so good. Oh,
wow. That is a big...
I was obsessed with her book. I can't remember what it's called right now, but the one where she was pregnant.
Expecting Adam.
Yes. I have read that book so many times. There was just something, and it was also a lifetime place and time. That was about when I was getting, you know, thinking about having kids. I was obsessed with that book. I love that book.
I adore her willingness to mix the uber practical approach that she has to life with an acceptance of the woo-woo elements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is what is really cool about her to me.
That's what I say about that book a lot is there's this how do I describe this book? There's this woo-woo stuff, but it doesn't matter. You just have to read it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I love about her is she's got 3 degrees from Harvard. She's like a science sociologist guru, and she also is really woo-woo. And I'm like, oh, like I love that because, you can be woo-woo and respected.
Absolutely. And her book about leaving Mormonism was also just fascinating. She really, really stripped things bare and wasn't afraid to say things. And I just really liked the approach.
Mm. And for anyone just quickly on the books, I just think, honestly, I know people say life-changing book, but it's actually sort of changed me, this book. It's about how she didn't tell a single lie for a whole year and how it changed her life and how to like live in an integrity. And I've just started telling the truth a bit more. And I mean like tiny little social white lies, like instead of making up an excuse, I'm being honest with people, and it's amazing.
Okay, I'm going to listen to it. I think I've listened to her other books as well, and I think she reads them. So I will be listening to that one, definitely. There it is. Okay, I'm so excited. All right.
And you said you'd been reading a novel too.
Yes, and so I've only just started it, so I can't actually say too much on it, but all I know is I can't wait to get into bed tonight and read some more. It's Lisa Tadeo's book, debut novel, Animal. Mm-hmm. And I loved Three Women, and I love her.
Three Women too.
Her fiction voice is just so spiky and edgy and really good, really good.
Oh, that's exciting, because I did like Three Women as well. In fact, I think I have 2 copies in this house somewhere. I am reading KJ. As you know, I was a fan of Amanda Ripley's The Smartest Kids in the World. And mm-hmm. she has a new book called High Conflict, Why We Get Trapped and How We Get Out. And in the way Amanda Ripley does so well and in the way we tend to love, it is a book about conflict, about getting in our own way. Actually, there's quite a bit of that in there. And, you know, things about like confirmation bias and stuff like that. But within stories. I mean, you know, the ability to tell a really good narrative and explain how conflicts happened and how people managed to get out of them. And I am loving it. Mainly, I think, because I'm so conflict avoidant. It's always good for me to have some sort of idea of how I might extract myself from conflict if I were to ever sort of venture in there. Plus, Amanda Ripley's just a lovely reader. I really enjoy her work a lot. So far, I'm about halfway through. Highly recommend Amanda Ripley's High Conflict. Do you have anything?
Well, I want to throw out another book about not telling a lie for a year, because a woman who wrote for me at the Times wrote a book called Would I Lie to You? Her name is Judy Kettler, and she spent a year also trying not to tell any form of social lies, and there were a variety of reasons why that was harder for her with her family history than it might have been for somebody else. And it is a really fascinating, I read it last year, and I may have mentioned it before, but it's a really fascinating read. So if you're kind of, if you're thinking about that as maybe like, you know, something you want to explore, like, I'm going to try to go a month without even saying, you know, your hair looks great, or no, I'm sorry, I can't make it. Although none of us can make it anymore. So that is a lie we don't have to tell. Anyway, if you want to add to that, you could add Judy's book, Would I Lie to You?
All right. Well, that would be a good follow-up, I think, to The Way of Integrity. And then I'm just going to be the most honest person on the planet, apparently. And have no conflict, or at least be able to extract myself from conflict. Because I'm sure being honest all the time will get me into some conflict. So
yeah, she basically
said, keep telling me my hair looks good, though.
Oh, I will always keep room, no matter what's happening with your hair, KJ. It always looks wonderful. There's
Thank
my
you.
Permanent
that's,
line
that's
moving
That's what
forward.
I like to hear. Very important to me. So, y'all, look for Emma Gannon's books. You can head to her website. As we said, it's emmagannon.co.uk. But you can also find her novel. It is Olive. In the U.S., at least, the cover is yellow, and it's beautiful.
It's a good cover, yeah.
Yeah, and it's been on my Instagram, so you can look for it there. She also has the book Sabotage, which is a little, teeny, very, very helpful book about getting out of your own way. Her first book was Control Out Delete, How I Grew Up Online, and then she moved on to the Multi-Hyphen Method that she talked about earlier. And later this year, coming out, she has Disconnected, How to Stay Human in an Online World. That is a heck of a book repertoire.
Those are some chops. Those are some chops, Miss Emma Gannon. It's very impressive. Yeah.
So everybody look for that. And Emma, where should people follow you? Where's your favorite social media spot if people want to learn more?
Well, controversially, I feel like I'm more of a Twitter person, but maybe that's not.
I am too.
I mean, we're writers. We like words. I hang out on there still. So yeah, I'm just Emma Gannon on there.
Excellent. Easy to find. All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Emma Gannon. And until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag Am Writing podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work. Pause. Stop. Thank you.